The Olympic Games in South Korea start in February, and they will not include Russian athletes competing under their flag. We'll discuss the decision by the International Olympic Committee coming up. But first, let's turn our attention to the year-end pledge drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here in the studio with me, John Gatto. Our single largest source of funding is listener support, and that means that in this season of giving, your gift is so vitally important. Take a few minutes right now to support the programs that you count on, that you enjoy, with your year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks so much to each and every one of you who pledged during this past hour. We met our goal of 15 and then even a couple more pledges during the last hour. Thank you so much. It's really great to have that kind of momentum and that kind of vote of support for what we're doing here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, it's a new hour. We have a dollar for dollar match up to $5,700 in effect during this hour. You can help us earn that. This generous match is from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Stuart McCulley and donors from Spring Green. And it means that they'll match every dollar you give, dollar for dollar.
Wow, yeah, Spring Green coming through, and the Greenbacks, it's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support for the programs. Give right now. Your gift will be matched at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for a long, long time, 100 years, because we're committed to quality, and since listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget, that quality is possible thanks to you.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many other programs as well. You're part of the quality you hear every day on WPR. When you donate, and your gift will be matched dollar for dollar at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At WPR, we have a core group of supporters who continue to give and give generously. They willingly contribute because they depend on WPR as a vital resource for so many informative, interesting, and entertaining programs. Maybe you rely on WPR too, and for whatever reason, maybe you've not yet given?
We're here to tell you that WPR relies on new members just like you to grow and to keep high-quality programs on the air. Today is the day. This hour is your hour. Show your support. Get your gift matched at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month or any amount that's right for you is all it takes.
This season of giving, let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to people in need throughout Wisconsin. Pledge $10 or $20 a month to support your favorite radio programs and help feed those facing hunger in your area. Do two good things with your gift to WPR right now when you choose one of the food bank gifts at WPR.org.
Actually, do three great things right now. It's that gift to the food banks. It's supporting WPR, and it's helping to earn a challenge, a matching grant that's going on dollar for dollar right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is the way that you can make your pledge. I'm John Gatto with Kate Archer-Kent. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for WPR programs that you rely on. And, you know, we in turn rely on you. And during this year-end membership drive, there's never a better time to make that gift. So maybe it's $10, maybe $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, it's the right amount.
Giving to WPR is so easy. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay.
It takes just a couple of minutes to make your gift to WPR. And your support right now makes a big difference because of the dollar-for-dollar match. That's at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this pledge drive, you can do two good things at once. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month, and you'll provide meals to those in need in your area. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, and if you're not a sustaining member, Here's an opportunity to become a sustainer right now. Right now, right this minute, really. It's easy to set up convenient, ongoing, monthly donations automatically from your bank account or your credit card. Get started with your sustaining membership at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you so much for your support. Now, Russia is a winter sports powerhouse, and the International Olympic Committee announced yesterday that the country will have no place in the upcoming Olympic Games in South Korea due to systematic doping. We're going to talk about the decision handed down by the IOC yesterday with Mark Johnson. He's a sports writer and photographer. He's written for magazines and newspapers, and his latest book is titled Spitting in the Soup: Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Well, what was your initial reaction to the move from the IOC to bar Russia from the 2018 Winter Games?
I was actually surprised. I didn't think they had it in them, really, because the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, they have two inherently conflicted roles. One, they're a sports promoter. They put on the biggest sporting event in the world next to the World Cup. But at the same time, they have an obligation to be something of a social moralist, to try and impose this statute that sport should be drug-free. And because the superstars of sport are often also dopers, there's an inherent conflict that if you throw out the best athletes because they're doping, then you're also throwing out the most powerful draw that your sport has for media and for fans. And so going into the Rio Olympics, the Summer Rio Olympics, the IOC knew that the Russians had been running a state-sponsored doping program, but they still let them compete. So that sent a pretty strong message to Russians and other doping nations that the laws weren't going to be enforced. But for the Winter Olympics next month in South Korea, the IOC seems
in February,
changed their mind. Yes, in February.
Well, Russia dominates the Olympics at the Winter Games in Sochi in 2014. Russian athletes, they got 33 medals overall. 13 of them were gold. That's more than any other nation. They are a winter sports powerhouse. What does it mean to have Russia effectively banned from the Winter Olympics?
I think that's made it all the more surprising that the IOC decided to throw them out because, you know, as you state, they do have some of the best hockey players in the world. They're traditionally very powerful in cross-country ski racing, biathlon. And so to throw out the superstars of winter sport really suggests that the IOC is taking this anti-doping seriously. What it means, how Russia is going to respond, we'll see. Up to this point, Russia has been fairly defiant and have said that these reports of their state-sponsored doping is effectively fake news and a conspiracy against Russian greatness in sport. So we'll see what happens next.
Russians also are really great figure skaters in the figure skating realm. Figure skating, a very high-profile sport in the Winter Olympics. But you wouldn't think of figure skaters in the doping arena. I mean, they've got other issues, but perhaps doping may not be one of them. What impact does this have on figure skating?
You know, I'm not really familiar with how it will affect figure skating. But when you look at the effect of doping, sometimes doping takes place in surprising sports you might not expect, particularly the use of anabolic steroids. What it does is it allows an athlete to train at a higher level and then recover much more quickly. So in a sport like figure skating, where power and strength and flexibility are certainly very important, doping could be used as part of the training regime. Isn't necessarily something that an athlete would dope before a competition, but it allows them to get a higher plateau of performance in the years leading up to the competition. And how this all came out is a Russian chemist named Grigory Rodchenkov, who oversaw the Sochi Winter Olympics doping program and ran the Russian anti-doping agency for effectively 10 years. He came clean through an association with an American filmmaker named Brian Fogel, who did a film called Icarus. And eventually that was reported by the New York Times. And once it was revealed that the Russians had been running this massive doping program, that's when the IOC really had to start paying attention. It wasn't the first time that news had hit that the Russians were running a state-sponsored anti-doping program. Back as early as 2011, 2012, another Russian anti-doping agency employee, a guy named Vitaly Stepanov, and his wife, Yulia Stepanov, who was a 100 and 800-meter sprinter, world-class sprinter, they went to both the World Anti-Doping Agency and the German media and said, hey, you know, Russia is running a systematic doping program. And that led to a report in 2016, the McLaren report by the World Anti-Doping Agency, that really laid out how systematic the Russians had been doping their athletes.
So we've seen a series of whistleblowers on the inside. Russian leaders, for their part, deny the allegations of doping. Is there enough evidence here that exists to prompt the IOC to inflict a massive penalty?
Absolutely. I mean, it should have happened. If you take the stand that doping is wrong and contrary to the spirit of Olympic sport, it should have happened in Rio, but it didn't. So it's happening now. And I think it does send a strong message. Really, if you look at the larger historical context of doping in sport, beginning with the 1936 Olympics in Germany, Hitler's Olympics, that's really when the Olympics took on utility as a very powerful propaganda tool for nation states. And so that's really how the doping program took root later in East Germany. The East Germans fully embraced doping in order to project their potency as a strong nation against the capitalist West and the occupying Russians.
And Russia and the U.S., they clash in the global arena. Are athletes making bad choices, poor choices, or is it doping in these worldwide athletic events as a proxy for power?
It's a little bit of both. In the case of Russia, the athletes, according to the McLaren report, the athletes really didn't have a choice. It was expected and demanded that they dope, and if they didn't dope, they weren't allowed to be on the Russian Olympic team. But in the case of the United States, for instance, historically, for a number of reasons, one, the way that our Olympic programs are funded, they're not taxpayer funded. They're more funded by corporations and donors. We've never had the incentive or the ability to create a state-funded top-down doping program. So more of, in the United States, our doping has been more of acts of individual athletes rather than something that was demanded by the state.
Let's bring in Michael, who joins us from WASA, with a question. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi. Now that the IOC has dropped this massive punishment on Russia, is it likely to see investigation in other countries? How isolated of an incident is this to Russia? Can Russia be punished retroactively for their doping allegations in Rio? And how likely is it that we see other athletes being punished either by their own state governments or individually by the IOC for doping in the future now?
Thanks, Michael. Mark, lots of questions there to dig into.
Well, I don't think there's a lot of incentive for state governments, particularly in more autocratic nation states, to punish their own athletes. Because, again, that these athletes are proxies. They are armaments in the global battle for prominence and national pride. But as far as sending a message to other states that are running top-down state-funded doping programs, I think it does send a strong message, because if you are running a national doping program, you're doing that in many cases in order to suggest to the world that you are a strong, powerful figure and your people are also strong and powerful and successful in the sporting field. But what this IOC ruling has said is that all those tools of propaganda, the flag, the anthem, going to the top of the medal podium are gone. And so now if you get busted for doping, all those propaganda tools disappear. So now it's a, now they have to make the calculation, do we continue to dope in order to secure our position in the national stage, knowing that that very act may get us thrown off the stage entirely? So yeah, it could potentially make a change. But as far as the individual athletes themselves, again, it goes back to where they live and how much freedom they have in that nation. Sometimes these athletes don't have that much choice over whether or not they can or can't dope.
Well, these athletes will be able to compete under a neutral uniform, a neutral flag. What is that? What does that mean? What does that entail?
So the IOC kind of came up with a compromise, because the issue is some of the Russian athletes, or all of them, have complained, said, well, look, some of us really were clean. That could be a fairly dubious claim, but the IOC has said, well, maybe you do have a point. And so essentially what they're going to try and do is, using a $15 million penalty that the Russians have, the IOC has demanded from the Russians as part of this penalty, they're going to go back and look and try and figure out which athletes really are clean, which is a difficult task, and allow those athletes to compete as neutral athletes under no nation state effectively. I mean, it's an interesting issue, because there is a comparable story. The South Africans were banned from the IOC beginning in 1970 because they allowed whites to compete on their Olympic team because of apartheid. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean that every South African athlete was a racist. I mean, there were a lot of South Africans who abhorred their system. Nonetheless, every single South African athlete was banned from the Olympics. So it's kind of, you have to punish everyone. The theory is the IOC is saying, we have to punish all of you, even though some of you are innocent, in order to affect these larger structural changes in how your games are organized by your government.
The Russian Olympic Committee was also fined $15 million. It was found guilty of wholesale drug cheating at the Winter Games in Sochi. We're talking about the news from the International Olympic Committee yesterday to ban Russia from the 2018 Games with Mark Johnson. He's a sports writer and author of Spitting in the Soup: Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. Your thoughts on the news from the IOC at 800-642-1234. What do you think of how the IOC handled Russia? Is this too little, too late? Do you think doping in sports is a problem? 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment. The International Olympic Committee has barred the Russian team from competing in the Winter Games in South Korea in February over widespread doping at the last Winter Games in Sochi. We're discussing the fallout this hour, but first let's check in our year-end pledge drive here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in with John Gatto. You count on the Ideas Network for in-depth talk about the issues, and we count on you to keep these discussions going strong. Your gift right now makes a huge difference, both this year and as we head into 2018, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Kate, we have a dollar-for-dollar match
Sweet.
Going on in this hour, and
yes.
We've had people stepping up and helping us earn that already. We've earned $1,000 towards this special match that totals just about $5,700. A gift from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Stuart McCauley, and donors from Spring Green. So what this means for you is that when you make your pledge of $50, it turns into $100. If you make a pledge of $100, it turns into $200, and so on and so forth. So we're asking you to take advantage of this match to double your support for WPR programs and give now. Help us earn the match at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you think about it, listening to the Ideas Network is like a tuition-free lifelong education. All you need is a radio or a computer or a mobile device to listen on.
And then it's your support that makes this lifelong learning available to you and hundreds of thousands of other people as well. They can all take advantage of it. That's amazing. You have the power to share information and learning with a huge community of people, your friends, your neighbors, your families, when you support WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And during this holiday season, give something extra when you support WPR. Your donation makes the programs you love possible, and you can ask for one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month.
These thank you gifts provide meals to those who are facing hunger in the community where you live. And it does so through the regional food banks around the state. So do two good things with your gift to WPR. Support the programming and support the food banks at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
December is a special time of year. We asked a few people, what are your year-end traditions?
One of my favorite December traditions is making Christmas cookies with my mom.
Our family tradition in December is the whole family goes bowling. And it's a weird tradition because none of us really bowl.
Well, every year, my friends and I like to indulge in one really cheesy Christmas Lifetime movie.
Make giving to Wisconsin Public Radio one of your year-end traditions. In return, you'll get programs that make you think, laugh, and start conversations all year long. Here's how.
You can go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this year-end membership drive. Good morning, I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. It is your gift of $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount, and right now your gift will be matched dollar for dollar. And because the single largest source of our funding is listeners, your gift is so important for the WPR programs that you enjoy.
Maybe you've donated in the past, a few years ago perhaps, and you feel like you've donated and done your part already. Well, if you enjoy listening to WPR year after year, we need your continued support to make this happen, to keep us going.
And if it's been a while since you donated, this is a perfect time to renew right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'll be glad to have you back.
And tell us what you think. Max from Eau Claire called and said, heartfelt appreciation for the humane, diverse, respectful, and deeply engaged conversation that WPR promotes, as well as its preference for thinking rather than shouting and so on and so forth. Well, share your comments if you share those sentiments. Do what you can to help support Wisconsin Public Radio and take advantage of this dollar-for-dollar match at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's a season of giving. Support the radio you love. Do something extra. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll make a difference for WPR and for those facing hunger in your area.
Support your WPR listening right now. Contribute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you.
The decision handed down yesterday, Russia is banned from the 2018 Olympics. It's the IOC's punishment for widespread doping during Sochi in 2014. It's not yet clear if Russian athletes plan to challenge this, by the way, in court. An IOC attempt to bar Russians from last year's Summer Olympics was overturned at the Court of Arbitration for Sport. We're talking about the latest news with Mark Johnson. He's a sports writer and author of Spitting in the Soup, Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports, gathering your thoughts on the IOC's decision as well at 800-642-1234. Will it feel like a real win if Americans take home medals when the Russians don't compete? Will you still watch the games? In what ways does it change the way you think about your experience, about this experience of the Olympics? Call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mark, will this be overturned? Will this have sticking power here in this ban? Will Russia be able to overturn this?
Well, I think they'll certainly try. Whether or not they're successful, I don't know. But there's certainly not a lot of evidence to support their claim that they're clean. I mean, it's overwhelming how much evidence there is, hard evidence that they were running a state-sponsored, not just doping program, but anti-doping program. In other words, they had, during the Sochi Winter Olympics, put together a system where the tainted urine of doped athletes was being swapped out for clean urine so that these doped athletes could compete with the appearance of being clean. So it was systematic both in the doping and the foiling of the anti-doping system. In fact, Russia's own anti-doping system was sort of perversely turned into a system that allowed Russian athletes to compete fraudulently. So it's overwhelming that they did this.
Well,
and they shouldn't be in the Olympics.
Certainly some American athletes are guilty of using performance-enhancing drugs. Can the U.S. criticize Russia for doping?
Yeah, I don't think there's any... You'd be hard-pressed to find the nation that has completely clean athletes. And you could certainly... And Russia has claimed historically and today that this is the pot calling the kettle black. But the IOC is an international organization, so it's not just an American organization. And perhaps it'll send a message, too, to American athletes who are doping, that the IOC is going to take this seriously, the anti-doping laws that first hit the books in the 1960s, and that you actually could be punished for cheating. Again, if you look at what fascinates me is the larger historical context of these nation-run doping programs. And to understand it, what Russia is doing today is really an extension of what has been going on since the Cold War. In 1962, Senator Hubert Humphrey, later became the vice president, he warned that once the Russians crushed us in the coming Olympic battle, he was speaking of Tokyo at Summer Olympics in 1964, he said, quote, "The red propaganda drums will thunder out in a worldwide tattoo, heralding the new Soviet men and women as virile, unbeatable conquerors in sports or anything else." So there was a real concern in America that the Soviets and the East Germans were going to mop the floor with us. And in fact, they did. And in 1970, deputy director of East Germany, Manfred Hoppner, he decreed that anabolic steroids should be applied and would be applied in all Olympic sporting events. The only events that were accepted from the systematic administration of anabolic steroids in East Germany was sailing and female gymnastics. So really the use of drugs on athletes is very much a contemporary expression of a Cold War battle for nationalist supremacy. So in some respects, in the context of the Cold War, the athletes were really pawns in a much larger struggle for supremacy.
Performance enhancing. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and I think that's where throwing out the entire Russian team and banning them from the Olympics sends a strong message that this long-standing battle for national supremacy using drugs, maybe we should end it.
Performance-enhancing drugs really became a high-profile discussion point during Lance Armstrong's era, especially in the U.S., and fallout from whether he doped or didn't dope, and his Tour de France wins. Wondering, how did that era play out in the performance-enhancing world with the legacy of Lance Armstrong?
Well, I think one of the things that the Armstrong era shows and illustrates is how ineffective the anti-doping system is, because Armstrong was essentially able to use EPO, which is a synthetic hormone that artificially accelerates the body's creation of red blood cells, which increases your endurance as a cyclist or a marathoner, really benefits you in endurance sports. Because there was no drug test for it, you could pretty much freely take EPO knowing that you wouldn't get busted. Now, eventually they came around with a test for it. WADA's own research has suggested that the anti-doping systems that are in place today are only catching maybe 3% of the doped athletes. And if you throw out the athletes who are being getting caught with marijuana in their system, it's catching closer to 1%. So systems that we have in place are really ineffective. And I think Armstrong's 7 Tour de France victories show how ineffective the doping system is.
Well, don't spectators want clean athletes, or do spectators really care whether an athlete is using performance-enhancing drugs or not?
You know, I think it depends on the country. So Belgium and France, they criminalized doping in sport in 1965. The United States, we didn't even create a U.S. anti-doping agency until the year 2000, 35 years later. Which suggests that for United States fans, we may say we want clean athletes, but really we want spectacle. I mean, in 1998, you had a famous home run battle between Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, which was largely drug-fueled. Baseball had never been more popular, even though it was very clear that these were artificially enhanced Popeye characters out there. So I think the morality that we state publicly isn't always matched by our actions, because the raison d'etre of pro sports is not sacerdotal. It's not to create morally and chemically pure humans. It is to entertain and make money. And that, I think, is Americans, we've taken a more pragmatic approach to doping and said, yeah, if the entertainment's good, these are free individuals, and they can do whatever they want with their bodies, as long as they're not hurting anyone else.
Talking right now with Mark Johnson, a sports writer and photographer, about the ban of Russia on the upcoming Winter Olympics. And we'll be returning to the conversation on Russia being banned from the upcoming Winter Olympics in South Korea due to systematic doping. But first, let's get up to speed on where we are with our year-end membership drive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. And this is a time when your financial support is the foundation for all the great discussions you enjoy on the Ideas Network today and every day. Make your tax-deductible year-end gift right now for 2017 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the news this hour is that we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $5,700 in effect right now, and so far we've earned not quite half of that. So perfect opportunity to help us take full advantage of this matching grant. It's a great time to pledge because these 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Stuart McCauley and donors from Spring Green, have pooled their money together to double every dollar that you give. It's their special way of inspiring you to support WPR. Double the impact of your pledge now. Make a pledge, please, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you're interested in playing a larger role as a Wisconsin Public Radio supporter. The 9XM Leadership Circle is a growing group of listeners who contribute $100 a month or more to support WPR programs.
Leadership Circle members want to help make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio programming will be here today, tomorrow, well into the future, well into the next 100 years of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make a pledge, perhaps increase your support to the 9XM Leadership Circle level at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name's Meg Marshall, and I'm from Weyerhaeuser, Wisconsin. I think today, especially with this crazy world we live in, it's more important than ever that people know what's going on in the world. This is not just about the United States, it's about the entire world. And the only place you find coverage of international issues to the depth that you find them on Wisconsin Public Radio is right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Meg from Weyerhaeuser, Wisconsin. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. We are raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio in all the programs you enjoy on the air. And so whether your pledge is $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift. gift.
There are so many important and truly interesting issues and discussions, conversations that are part of the Ideas Network, this hour being a perfect example of that. You rely on these discussions, and that's why your gift during our year-end membership drive is really so important.
Help us put a strong finish on 2017 with your gift right now. It'll be matched dollar for dollar. We can continue to discuss the issues, the pressing issues in the months to come. Make your year-end gift right this very minute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A dollar for dollar match. Where else can you invest a dollar and immediately have it doubled in value? Give now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR will go twice as far.
And support your WPR listening. If you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up, super convenient. Ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. The Kremlin said this morning it needs to analyze the International Olympic Committee's ruling to bar Russia and its sports officials from the upcoming Winter Games before making any decisions regarding the country's participation. This came from a spokesman for President Vladimir Putin this morning. It was published in the Washington Post. We're talking about the fallout from the news that Russia will be banned from the 2018 Winter Games with sports writer and photographer Mark Johnson. His book is Spitting in the Soup: Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. We're gathering your insights on the IOC decision as well at 800-642-1234. Is the politics coming to play in the games, or do you think it's all about athletes? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. A listener called in to say he doesn't really care whether athletes dope or not. He just wants there to be a level playing field within the competition. So either everyone dopes or they don't. A big part of what makes the games exciting is having fierce competition, and you can't really have that if some athletes are doping and others are not. Mark, what would you respond to that?
I think that's an argument that's been made, say, particularly in light of the fact that the anti-doping system that we have in place is so ineffective. Say, well, it's not working. We're spending all this money and they're still doping like crazy. So let's just give up and make it a free for all. I'm not on board with that. And I think the main reason is that if you look at a 15, 16, 17 year old kid who finds that they have an incredible talent for tennis or swimming or cycling, and then they decide, I want to be an Olympic athlete, and you as a parent have to say, okay, in order to pursue this path, you're going to have to start taking drugs. I think both on moral and perhaps health grounds, that's not a decision that society wants to make. And I don't think that's the direction we want to go to. And particularly for Americans, because we're one of the few countries in the world that allows the marketing of drugs direct to consumers on television. We have stated and made decisions as a society that drugs are good and the more the better. And in fact, we should be able to market these directly to consumers on television. I'm not sure that Olympic sport should follow the path that Americans at large have taken and say, you know, drugs are the key to higher performance in life, both in everyday life and on the sporting field. So I don't think that a free-for-all is the way to go.
And another
argument. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a gray area in doping. What is one performance enhancing drug versus another? How does the IOC navigate what is above board and what is illegal?
So the World Anti-Doping Agency, which is an agency that is independent from the IOC, part of their obligation is every year to create a list of banned substances. And it is constantly changing. For instance, at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, the U.S. cycling team was using blood boosting. So that's where you take your own blood out and then reinsert it for a competition. And it has the same effect as would to train at altitude or use EPO. In 1984, during the Olympics, this was not an illegal process, but it turned into a scandal. And shortly after the 84 Olympics, blood doping was banned. So that's an example of how, of that gray area, what could be legal one year, perhaps due to a media scandal or an explosion of focus into this process, can become a banned and diabolical act the next year. So it is constantly changing. And because sports medicine and the pharmaceutical industry is constantly moving forward, it's difficult for a World Anti-Doping Agency to stay on top of these new performance-enhancing drugs that are coming down the pike. Now, at some level, the pharmaceutical industry does work with the World Anti-Doping Agency to sort of give them a heads up on what new performance-enhancing drugs are coming down the road. But it's a relatively uneasy relationship because the technology and the patents are so valuable. The pharmaceutical industry really doesn't want to share this technology widely with agencies like WADA.
Is there a rigorous testing program that leads up to the Olympics? I recall once I interviewed an Olympic weightlifter who said there was testing people coming to his door as he was training for these big events on a weekly to monthly basis that he was being tested. How rigorous is the testing from country to country?
It does vary a lot from country to country. So in the United States, for instance, we're probably more aggressive because we are spending more money to send out drug testers who can show up unannounced at your door at 6 a.m. and test your urine. Whereas in other third world countries where it's a challenge to keep the lights on or get food on your table, spending money on drug testers is a luxury that the government simply isn't spending money on. So it certainly does vary from nation to nation. And as Lance Armstrong has showed, it's very, very easy to evade these drug tests, even if they are random, through drug tapering, taking very small amounts that disappear from your blood system and urine within a matter of hours. There are ways to work around the random drug testing.
Getting back to the athletes for a moment, some individual Russian athletes, as we mentioned earlier, can take part in the Winter Games, but they compete under this neutral Olympic flag. Has this been a precedent in the past with a neutral Olympic flag to compete under? And from an athlete's perspective, does that carry the same weight as the honor of competing under your own flag?
It has happened before, and I think it certainly, from the athlete's point of view, it's not a very good compromise, because part of the joy and satisfaction out of making it to the Olympic Games, which is the culmination of a lifetime of dedication and focus on one discipline, one sport, is celebrating both your nation and also the collective of other athletes that you've gone to the games with. So it certainly would take a lot of satisfaction out of going to the Olympics and then perhaps winning a medal as a neutral athlete, as opposed to an athlete that's part of a larger nation state. I mean, it's one of the compromises that I guess the IOC had to make. It's a concession really to matters of human rights, because the athletes, the Russian athletes, if there are any clean Russian athletes, certainly do have a strong argument that it's a violation of their human rights to be thrown out of the games for crimes that they had nothing to do with.
And do we know yet how it will be determined whether an individual athlete will be able to compete under this neutral flag, or how will that work?
Well, as I understand, that's what that $15 million penalty will be used for.
Oh.
They will go through, if I understand it, I'm not sure who it will be. Will it be WADA or the IOC? They will go through an athlete's history of drug testing, perhaps look at their history of drug positives, and if they can find that an athlete has never tested positive, has always come up clean in the random drug testing, then maybe they'll cut them some slack and allow them to compete. But it's at this point, it's not clear how that's going to work, and I'm sure it's going to be controversial.
So, Mark, as this story develops, what will you watch as things progress here?
I mean, to me, what is going to be interesting is not so much the absence of the Russians. I mean, for instance, in the 1980 Olympics, the United States and many Western countries boycotted the Moscow Olympics because Russia had invaded Afghanistan. And then in 1984, Russia boycotted the LA Olympic Games. Looking back, did that take away from the glamour and the excitement of the games? I don't think so. I mean, you could argue that, you know, the Americans won gold medals in cycling, both men's and women's. And you could argue that the only reason they won is because the Eastern Europeans, the East Germans, and the Russians weren't there to give them a good competition. But I don't think that takes away at all from the gold medals that the Americans won in 84 in Los Angeles. And I think going forward, too, is we don't know what other countries are running systematic state-run doping programs. Historically, it tends to be more autocratic nations where the interests of the individual and the rights of the individual are always subsumed to the glory of the state. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this wholesale ejection of an entire country will affect other countries that are running state-run doping programs. Will they change their ways? Will they perhaps give a second thought to how they're running their doping programs? Or maybe they'll just get more sophisticated and diabolical in how they go about hiding their doping programs.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me on.
Mark Johnson is a sports writer and photographer, and his book is called Spitting in the Soup, Inside the Dirty Game of Doping in Sports. This hour of the morning show is produced by Keely Boltina and Bill Martins. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. And now let's turn our attention to the year-end pledge drive that is underway here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in the studio with John Gatto. This is your chance to support the programs that you count on every single day on the Ideas Network, programs that keep you in touch, informed, interested. I'm enlightened every day. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important as we end this year and look forward to 2018.
Every conversation that we have here on the Ideas Network and on this program, like the one we've just been participating in as listeners, if nothing else, help advance our understanding of news and stories of the day. And frankly, it's your support that's making that happen. It's your support that fuels the team behind producing these programs and bringing them to you. Kate just mentioned a number of the producers behind the scenes, people who are working on this. They size up the stories of the day, the breaking news of the day. This particular story broke yesterday afternoon, and yet they were able to pull up a good guest for a great hour of conversation to help us better understand what's going on. That's all part of the conversation. It's all part of what makes the conversation so interesting, those conversations that we have on this show and others here on the Ideas Network.
Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember that your pledge, every pledge this hour, helping us earn a dollar-for-dollar match, in effect, from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Stuart McCulley and donors from Spring Green. Thank you for your special gifts, and thank you for helping to create some additional incentive for you now to make your pledge. Your $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match. Double your support for WPR's programs when you give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR year-round. Now donate the same way you listen. Become a sustaining member. Make the decision once, and you'll make ongoing contributions of, say, $10 or $20 a month for as long as you wish.
Your sustaining membership will always be current, and it cuts down on paperwork. Don't delay. Become a sustainer right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to take advantage of matching dollars here on the table. Still matching dollars left. I'm Kate Archer-Kent with my co-host here this morning, John Gatto. Listener support, single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs that you rely on. That's why your support during this drive is so very important. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. It will be doubled dollar for dollar. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
If you're a sustaining member, thank you. Make today the day you increase your support by $5 or $10. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And once again, make your gift right now at WPR.org. Get in on the match at 888-202-2552. And thanks.